You're listening to CPC Together, a podcast produced by Central Peninsula Church in the San Francisco Bay Area, where we talk about pretty much everything.
Yes, Easter.
All right, we're on the week after Easter, the day after Easter, Monday.
Resurrection Monday.
And I am in the office with Rachel and Shalan. And you may be wondering, who is Shalan? And we will tell you, because we're going to introduce you to our artist for our vision series. And we're going to talk about that, and I think you're going to love it. But before we do that, I'm curious about what Easter traditions. So yesterday we just celebrated Easter. And besides eating a lot, I'm wondering if you guys have any Easter traditions that your family has done over the years?
Excellent question. I feel like the first thing that came to mind was post-church lunch and then a nap, but that feels like...
It feels like every
Sunday. Every Sunday. But I feel like, yeah, we've always done a lunch. We've always gone to church. I don't think Easter egg hunts were huge with our family. Maybe we would have wanted them to be, but not too many traditions. I think mostly just a lot of family time.
That's good.
We did Easter egg hunts. My parents were very into equality, and we would collect all the eggs, and then all the candy would get thrown into a pile and then redistributed.
Oh,
wow.
So it like wasn't actually about how many eggs. You still wanted to find the most, but it's not like you actually got more candy.
Redistribute the wealth. Wait, maybe we'll edit that out.
I mean, that would probably go quite that far.
Oh.
We are from Canada, so leaning slightly more in that direction.
Okay, so my parents didn't like, they didn't like how Easter, commercial Easter got in the way of the Christian Easter, like real Easter. And so my dad, like his family all liked to do like the Easter egg hunts and that kind of stuff. But my dad decided, and I think we were like maybe like 9 or 10 when he decided to start this. He recognized that all the Easter candy would go on super sale after Easter.
The week after, yeah.
And so he'd go into the store and like clean up, you know, like 75-90% off Easter candy, whatever. And then he started this thing called the After Easter Beagle. And and he would like, you know, make Easter baskets for us and say it wasn't the Easter bunny, it was the After Easter Beagle.
Like a dog?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I'm still confused.
Go ahead, ask some questions. Let me help you understand.
Like the Easter bunny you see in like pictures or chocolate bars.
Right.
Like how would he make a beagle?
Well,
what form did this
the idea
take?
Is that the After Easter Beagle knew how... He knew how to find the deals.
Oh, and so, I guess like the Easter Bunny. Like
the Easter Bunny brings
candy.
It, right?
Okay,
it's like
okay.
The Tooth Fairy, whatever. Yeah, so.
Because they're scavengers. They're not scavengers. They like hunt things.
Beagles are?
Well, they're...
Are they all hunting dogs?
Yeah. And maybe not hunting, but they're... I don't know what the right word other than scavenge is.
So they're hunting for the best deals on the Easter candy. Yeah, so we would like have... Just and it was like all pure candy. And Katie's family does like it's like a smaller Christmas. They do like big Easter baskets with all kinds of fun stuff in it. And so the girls always get really excited about opening the Easter baskets. So yeah, Katie was not about to adopt the After Easter Beagle in our family. She wasn't for it. Easter was pretty cool yesterday. Did you guys both go to the Easter service?
Yeah.
What was your favorite part?
Probably the baptism, honestly. It was really powerful to see a picture of what Kevin was teaching about. I mean, of the Easter story.
Yeah.
I was in the second service and the family got baptized, and that was super cool.
Yeah.
Where, the dad, helped baptize the wife and she helped baptize the girls, and just like to see them all do that together was really powerful.
Yeah. Like being on stage and singing and watching that, oh, it's hard to sing while you're like next to tears. But yeah, there's just something super, super powerful. Even when the kid did the first service, a kid did a jump in.
A straight cannonball.
Was it
into
from the
water?
Stage?
No, he'd like got in the, he got like on the first step.
He like went up this.
And then plugged his nose and then jumped in.
Oh my gosh.
It was pretty funny.
That's great.
And he then was they, so like, excited out after. Out yeah. He jumped out.
Oh, it's really cool. And like, man, this is like the center of our faith, that like everything that we saw on Sunday, like the baptisms and the, this is like why we do what we do. Mm-hmm. This is why we're here. What started the movement years ago. We were talking a little bit before, and I don't know, I was just thinking about how we have this, like, I think sometimes it's easy to not think about, but we have these mystical sides to our faith, these things that can only, that really it's hard for us to wrap our brains around, things like the Holy Spirit guiding us, you know, like it's so clear that the Holy Spirit is a part of our lives and is here to counsel and guide and all that stuff. But it's sometimes hard to embrace that. Like it's sometimes hard to leave this like physical, what we understand, like the black and white right in front of us world, and go to that side. And I think Easter, I'm always confronted with that same thing. Like when we were talking about, you know, bringing friends and what would they think of the baptism service? And what would they think when we're saying, you know, we believe that, you know, the center of our faith is God coming down to be human on earth, and that, you know, sin put him on the cross and he conquered it and came back to life. And we can say that and with a pretty straight face, but it's kind of crazy to think about, right? I don't know. You guys ever think about that?
I think I think about it more when I'm with kids. Like a couple weeks ago, I was with two kids that I get to see quite a bit. One's 5 and one's 4. And we were talking about the cross, and they're like, "What's the cross?" And then we just got to talk about it and then open their little like storybook Bible, which I love. It's so good. The Sally Lloyd-Jones one, or maybe she's the illustrator. I don't know. But we were reading through the story and they were just astounded by the cross, by the fact that Jesus would die for us, and then the resurrection. And what I love about kids is that they still have that sense of like wonder, but also just like utter shock or even confusion, or I don't know, the way that they process things, you see it on their faces. Sometimes you don't, and then they come up and they're like, "Can you go back to this and explain this?" And I think that's what's cool about Easter. But if we're not careful, we might kind of like just blow right through that. I don't know. I think I see it most with kids, with that wonder and excitement.
Yeah, it's similar for me. It reminds me of being a kid and growing up, going to church and hearing all these stories. And often they were told in a similar fashion to superhero stories or Harry Potter or something like that. And it was, I remember being in junior high, and I had one of the youth group volunteers was a recent believer. And she came up to me and my friends one morning, was like, "Guys, I'm so excited. I was reading Daniel. Did you know that he got thrown into a pit of hungry lions and God saved him? That's incredible." And we were all like, "Yes, of course. Like, we've heard that story 100 times or whatever." But I think it was around then that I realized how incredible these stories were. And if you hadn't heard them before, they would be hard to believe.
Yeah.
And maybe I don't fully believe them when I stop and think about it.
I think, you know, you saying stories, like it to me, that was the, if I could pick like a word that described actually the whole weekend, like Good Friday, Easter, it's the power of story. And like we heard Jesus' story and, you know, like we've grown up hearing those stories, but also like hearing the miracle of God at work in people's lives is just absolutely incredible. Like, you know, all those interviews, we had 24 people being baptized, so we didn't have time to like show the entire interview for every single person, because that would have been like 2 hours in itself. But each one of those stories is pretty awesome. You know, mm-hmm. they have stories of God just slowly kind of getting people's attention and us following our own way until we finally have this moment where we're like, you know what, I don't want to live my own way anymore. And like all 24 of them, you know, and I just was looking out at mm-hmm. that group of you know, probably 1,300 people that we had in our services on Sunday, and thinking, man, every single one of them has some kind of story that's in process. And God is at work in each one of those stories. And to me, that's like a miracle in and of itself. Just kind of overwhelming. I just want to tell more stories.
More. Well, what's powerful about that, I think, is that it's an intersection of our stories with God's. Like that, it's not, they're not separate from each other. Because I think sometimes we can look at Easter or those stories and be like, wow, that God is so cool. But then it's like when we've experienced his work in our lives, or when we've internalized that story, I think that's what makes it so beautiful, of like seeing those baptisms and the joy on people's faces, or the tears that are flowing after, and the freedom that comes with that. They've clearly internalized that story, and the hope is that each one of us do too, and realize that that story is just as significant to us as well.
Yeah. And speaking of stories, we're going to hear one person's story today. And to intro Shalane, you may have seen our, well, you have seen, if you've come to church or been online at all, you've seen our vision series art. And you may have wondered where that came from. And that is actually something that came from Shalane. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I just think it's super cool that we have an artist at our church, and that you're using that art to help us express what's happening in the vision series. But you weren't always a career artist, is that right? You did something else before.
Yeah, it was a career change for me. I graduated in mechanical engineering and worked in product design mostly for a while before transitioning into art. And now I do, professionally, I do 3D art for video games and animation. Hmm. So this is a little different, what I did for church.
Right.
From what I do on a day-to-day basis, too.
But still a pretty, like, hard shift, right? Like, quite different. What got you to change careers?
Yeah, there were aspects of engineering that I enjoyed. And product design was pretty exciting because there was a lot of variety what we were doing, and we were creating new things, which is kind of cool. But I had started taking art classes kind of on the side because that was always something I enjoyed. And it was actually, this is like a random side note, but one of the catalysts in my journey was The Force Awakens, which was like the newest Star Wars movie at the time. Yeah. After like years of, after episodes 1 through 3 had come out, it was the new one. Mm-hmm. And it had like a female lead, which I thought was cool. And I just really liked that movie. And I got a couple of books, the like Star Wars books. And one of them was the Art of book. And it has a bunch of concept art and production work that they created to help create the film.
Is that the one with Jar Jar, where they introduced Jar Jar?
No.
Because everyone hates that one.
Yeah, that was episode 2 or 1.
Yeah,
that was one of the first ones.
I don't know why everyone hates Jar Jar.
In the early 2000s.
I don't get it. He's so cute.
Well, I'm trying to place, because recently, well, not recently, a couple of years ago, I decided I was going to watch all of them. And I thought I watched them, some Star Wars person told me what order I needed to watch them in. And I thought I watched them in chronological order. So I started with maybe Rogue One or something like that. So I'm confused about when they came out. I know the three older ones are like episode 3, 4.
Yeah, 4, 5, 6.
4, 5, 6. So which one is this?
This is episode 7.
Okay.
So the first three were 4, 5, 6. At the time, it was one. Well, the first one, they didn't know they were going to make more even. There was Star Wars, basically. And then they kept making more of them. And then 20 years later, they decided to make more, and they're like, let's make prequels. So okay. they made episodes 1 through 3. And then 10 years later, they made episode 7. So this was like 2015 okay. when this movie came out.
So then they made a companion guide that helped you see how their creative process in creating the film.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like paintings people have done to help visualize the Star Wars world.
Oh.
And the characters and like the different planets they're going to visit and all that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
And I was flipping through this book and I was like, I could do this. Not now, but I think I could practice. And like someone got paid to paint these pictures
yeah.
for Star Wars. And I think that sort of probably started me well. Down the path where I was, what?
Probably got paid pretty well, I would think.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Sometimes the big names pay less because it's like...
Oh, because they're like, yeah, you're lucky to be working with us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. kind of.
Wow.
Because people will take less to work on Star Wars.
Kind so, of. Shallan, is this just a happenstance or are you like a Star Wars nerd?
I'm probably a Star Wars nerd. There's definitely different levels
yeah,
of
oh,
Star
yeah.
Wars nerddom.
There's a big, it's a big continuum, but
I know what order the movies go in.
Yeah.
So. If you don't, you can ask Shallan and she will instruct you.
Do you know any of the languages, any like bits of the languages of any of the different, you know?
I had a friend in high school who was learning Elvish from Lord of the Rings, and that was impressive. I've struggled with languages a little bit, so trying to pick ones up from movies hasn't been high on my list.
I was hoping you were going to say the clicking one, like the. It's like, oh, that one's so cool.
So there's the so you're a mechanical engineer, you see the art piece in the Star Wars book, you say, I think I could do that. So at what point did you you just started creating your own work or?
Yeah, it was sort of. It was years of practice and taking classes and trying to at some point starting to like network and try and meet people who were in jobs like this and and learn from them and have them look at my work and stuff like that. So it was probably, I mean, from that point, it was like 5 years or something before I got a job doing art.
Yeah.
It's funny. They say, one of my favorite sayings from this journey is, it takes 7 years to become an overnight success.
Oh.
And it's the kind of thing where like, I don't know, I post on LinkedIn or whatever that I got this new job and people are like, wow, that's cool. That's totally different than engineering. Like, congratulations, whatever. And that's all they see is that yeah. like moment where it switches and they're like, oh, I wish I could pursue my dreams or something like that. And I think people just don't realize that it's really a journey.
Yeah. You had to work for 5 years learning how to draw at a professional level. And so you had talked a little bit before we started recording about sort of, you know, we're in the midst of a practice series. We're doing practice labs based on Sabbath, and we did it for Silence and Solitude, and we're really emphasizing this idea of practicing. And you said that there was kind of you saw a similarity with what you had gone through with your art stuff.
Yeah. So when... Kevin and Sandy sort of approached me and asked me about helping out with the art. I did have some experience being in Kevin's small group previously where he was sort of testing out some of these spiritual discipline concepts and like how do they play out in a group setting when we try to be silent together for 10 minutes or something like that, which we've now done as a church, which is cool.
Yeah, we had the silent sermon.
Yeah, the silent sermon. And if people came to the practice labs, we got to try that out together, which was cool. But I wouldn't say I'm an expert in spiritual disciplines and I'm an expert and I'm an artist. So they came to me to ask. Like, it didn't work like that at all. And when I was thinking about the disciplines, it really reminded me of practicing art and just the process that it is, and a lot of getting better at art is sitting down every day and doing it.
Mm.
Even if what you draw is bad and you like continue to produce bad art, you still sit down and you do it because that's how you get better. And I saw parallels between that and spiritual disciplines where you sit down and you practice silence or you read your Bible or pray. And sometimes it doesn't feel like God meets with you. But it's over time that being faithful in that practice and disciplined in that practice that God works and transforms us.
Yeah. I feel like we don't often, like, when God's doing that work, or maybe even with art or, you know, like with music or whatever, anything that we have to practice, I'm not always super aware of the growth. You know, like, I don't know at what point I started being able to play in different keys on the piano. I remember the starting it. Like, I remember trying to learn like a Michael W. Smith song and being like, how do I do this? Oh, I don't know how to do it. And I remember little things along the way, but I can't tell you like at what point, like, I started. Like, there's certain milestones, but
do you
feel like the same thing? Like, I don't know when I became a professional artist, but
definitely.
Like, somewhere along the way.
At one point, I put together a little presentation on, like, some of my journey, and I pulled art from, like, different years along the way, and was just, like, looking back, just the process of putting that together, I saw the change over the course of years, and could see sort of 5 years ago how far I had come. And that convicted me spiritually.
Oh.
Because I looked back. I'm like, I don't know if I see the same transformation in my spiritual life that I can see in my practice as an artist.
Whoa, that's good.
So, that it was really stuff, good. Realizations like that where I was like, shoot, I don't think I've been as faithful as I could be.
I feel like I say this too often, so I may have said it to you guys, but like this idea of keeping a journal, you know, I always kind of feel like there's journal people and not journal people. And I've never really been a journal person, but I had a mentor for like a 2 year period of my life that forced me to keep a journal. And it was, so I did it and it was fine. It didn't seem like it was super life changing, which is why I stopped. But I'll pick up that journal every now and then, and I look back at like the stuff I was praying and the stuff that I felt like God was doing. And I never, it's just, it's funny how I, like, I'll pray for something and then move on with my life. Like, I don't stop and think like, or thank God for the way he answered a prayer. I just kind of move on. And I think it's so good, Shalane, like what you're talking about, to be able to look back and say, where has God been active, or where have I been intentional about trying to practice, you know, to become more like God? I mean, that's like, that's what this thing is all about, right? Is being, we're trying to get more intentional about actually following Jesus. If we're saying that we're followers of the way, then we should be intentional. If you're saying you're an artist, you know, you can't just, you could have gone on to LinkedIn and changed your employment status to artist. And you'd be an artist by name. And there might probably be a lot of people that would say, oh, Shalane's an artist. Great. Awesome. But until you like start being intentional and practicing that art, I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. Because I guess you still would be an artist.
Yeah. I mean, even the definition of artist, I think it's pretty broad. And I think people almost are afraid of claiming it sometimes. There's a bit of the imposter syndrome. I think people get that. Until someone pays me for my art, I'm not an artist.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I think the analogy is breaking down. Because I'm imagining it. Is that the same for Christianity?
Right. I was also trying to follow you.
Because we're not Christian. That. I mean, we're not Christians because we're practicing things, right?
I think our identity as Christians would lead us to live a certain way, ideally. Like, the practice would flow out of, like, we don't practice because of practicing for itself. But if we talk about the goal of being communion with God and following him,
right,
it flows out of our desire to follow him.
Yeah, that's good. Because similar to art, like, you don't you practice in part because you enjoy the process and the journey, but the goal is to become someone who could paint a Star Wars scene, and they would use it to like inspire the movie.
Yeah.
And Kevin has talked that way a lot, where we want to become the kind of people who will just make decisions more like Jesus did. Mm. And it's not something we like force. We can't just flip a switch and start making choices like Jesus. Like, it's a process of changing to become a person.
Yeah. The kind of person who, to become the kind of person who naturally loves your neighbor.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, if you may not be that type of person, so practice that. But you're not earning your Christian, your Christianity. You're not earning your love of God. You are loved by God. Mm. You are in his kingdom. It's not like you're earning it. But yeah, you are trying to become the kind of person that embodies who Jesus is.
Mm.
So maybe the analogy is good. I just was using it wrong.
Yeah. And I have, I actually have a book that's called You Are an Artist. And the idea is to like, anyone can go out and make stuff and create art. It, I mean, there's different levels. The definition of art is pretty broad, but there's definitely that camp or that perspective of, yeah, we can all make stuff.
I love that.
Yeah. The title could come first, and then you live into it.
So can you tell us a little bit about the art itself? I know we don't necessarily... If you're listening, you might not have it in front of you right now, and I don't encourage you to if you're driving, but you could probably go on the website and look at it. We have it up here. I'm wondering if you could just talk us through it, because it has some depth to it, and you kind of dug pretty deep going through some of these themes that you have, and some of them have yet to be unveiled. Like, we have a few more, quite a few more different series that we haven't unveiled the art pieces yet, but talk us through...
Yeah.
A little bit.
So all of the art is up in the lobby. I'm not sure it's all on the website at this point in time, but definitely the first one for Attentiveness, which is the fall series, and then the series we just did on Sabbath, were both for the practice of attentiveness. So there's four main paintings for each of the four practices that we'll be exploring as a church over the next couple years. And the prompt for all of this was like not super defined. Like, I was given a lot of freedom in picking a theme or even what to make to try and represent the art.
Kind of makes it harder.
Represent the disciplines. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes having more boundaries is actually a good thing for creativity. There were several months of just collecting images, reference images and stuff, and running them by Kevin and the team and seeing what they were drawn to. And at one point we sort of settled on creating a main piece for each discipline. And then the habits, which is silence, solitude, and Sabbath thus far, each have an icon. So those sort of slot under them. I think if you see the art in the lobby, they're actually paired with their icons.
Okay, so it's like this one.
Yeah.
Like, where they'll have icons underneath.
Yeah, we're looking at a document I put together that has the icons paired with the art, too. So I did a lot of exploration, and I sort of settled on a water theme. And there's a couple of reasons for that. There's a lot of biblical significance to water and its life-giving properties, especially, and that being connected with Jesus. And then water in nature is like very powerful and captivating.
Yeah.
Like, people travel to see waterfalls, or the Grand Canyon, which has been shaped by water, or the lack of water has created like incredible deserts and different kinds of features. And then there's like a mysterious element to water, which, like, the ocean, I think, is big and vast and mysterious, and almost the like cycle of water through the atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me. So a combination of those things inspired this water theme.
By the way, Instagram has now, I've whatever algorithm it's doing for me is sending me a lot of like weird sea creatures coming up from the dark while people are swimming.
Oh.
And it's just terrifying me. Gosh. Sharks, like crocodiles, like all kinds of stuff. For some reason, it's sending me all these videos.
Stop clicking on them.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah,
maybe
I can't help it.
It's a picture of you running around the corners, like scaring people in buildings.
I don't
like,
do that.
Like you're the sea creature in this situation.
Okay, I do that sometimes. Sorry. I am thinking about, you know, mysterious water. And oh, I'm also thinking about how people are telling me that I can't, if I'm training for a triathlon, I can't train in the pool. Oh. And so I'm thinking, which body of water am I going to be able to swim in that doesn't have scary sea creatures that are going to come eat my legs? I don't know what that's going to look like or
what
where I'm going to go.
What triathlon are you doing? Because they might be located where scary sea creatures can be too.
Well, then I started thinking, what not man-made body of water is not scary? I think I'd be scared in all of them. Yep. What if, like Crystal Springs Reservoir, which you're not supposed to swim in, even that probably has little fish that will come and bite you, or snapping turtles.
Little Loch Ness monster.
Yeah, who knows? It's
a crystal crab.
The crystal crab.
I don't know.
Anyway, sorry, Shirley. I just had to throw that in there. So that's really cool. So the water themes. And yeah, you can see in all the different images, all of them have like a water aspect to it.
Hmm.
And you had also talked about Psalm 23 was kind of a launching point for you a little bit too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that opens, he makes me lie down in green pastures and leads me beside quiet waters and restores my soul. And that, I sort of tied in with the first piece a little bit, which is like a forest stream. Mm-hmm. So not exactly the same as Psalm 23, but the idea of attentiveness towards God. I think the forest stream is a place where I've been in the past physically, and there's just, I think the ambient noise and the setting and nature sort of away from distractions and stuff creates a space where it's easier to be attentive towards God, and sort of like strips all the things out of life that are distracting. And
you got married in that environment.
It's true. Yeah.
Like a forest. I mean, there wasn't a stream right there.
There wasn't a stream right there, but yeah, in the Redwoods in Santa Cruz, it was nice.
That could be the As the Deer Psalm. What's that one?
Psalm.
Isn't there a Psalm?
42.
Is it from Psalm 42?
As
the deer pants for the water.
Yeah. No.
Because there could probably be a forest stream. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good connection.
That is.
Maybe you could add a little deer in there. So one of the icons of your first attentiveness one, you didn't actually do this on purpose, did you? It's a quarter rest, like in music. It's
right.
Like, it looks like a little top hat, and
yeah.
that's a quarter rest, right? Is it a quarter rest or half rest?
I think we said half.
Half rest. Yeah.
The quarter rest is a little
squiggly. Yeah.
Yeah, that was unintentional. Even though I took classical violin lessons for a while when I was little, so I know what a half rest is. I was more just thinking of someone laying down or a bed or something when I created that icon. But yeah, I have pages of icon sketches that I did to try and connect them to the different habits.
That's so cool. Are there other ways that your art that you've created for this series has surprised you, or that you've like gone back to it and seen other themes or things that you might not have intentionally thought of before?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'd be excited to hear what people who maybe don't know anything about the process, how they respond and sort of what they see in it. And I don't know if I've heard too many of those stories yet. But the process for me wasn't super linear, where like I figured this out and then I decided which paintings I was going to make. It was a little more ambiguous or nebulous, where I sort of settled on this water theme and I found different photos, reference photos that I thought were cool and would make good paintings for something like this. And I probably even painted a couple of them before I started categorizing and defining them and assigning them to practices. So the process for me was like somewhat like that, where I would like paint something and then discover these connections in it.
Really cool. As an artist, I'm just curious, do you have like, I know like as a songwriter, I'm curious if it feels the same way. Sometimes if someone like has a commission for you, it feels like you're creating something for somebody else. Not necessarily. I mean, probably any good art, you have to tap into your soul a little bit. But do you feel like it's more meaningful to you to be able to create stuff outside of being commissioned? Like just to kind of like let express yourself through an artistic medium?
Yeah, it's definitely different than creating based on a prompt. And that's something I've been able to explore a little more since getting a job in art. There were like several years where I was creating art for my portfolio that I thought companies would want to see.
Yeah.
And after getting a job and sort of working it for a little while, I was like, oh, I have a job. I don't need to be like pushing on my portfolio constantly. What do I want to do? And what do I want to create? And I actually went back to painting at that point more than I had been. So for a while, I was on the, like, I want to do paintings for Star Wars track. So I was learning how to draw and paint, which translated into what I do now, which is 3D art. And I think those skills helped me in 3D art as well. But I don't paint and draw for work, really.
Yeah.
It's creating models in 3D on the computer. So it's a little different. And after working and doing that for a little while, I realized I enjoyed the process of painting. So I sort of went back to painting, and that was, I don't know, a year or 6 months before I was approached with this project. So I feel like it sort of spoke to the interest I had at the time as well, where I wanted to be painting and doing more. And it's, I mean, it's an honor to be asked, to use my skills in this way. And I think I always hoped I'd have the opportunity to do stuff like this.
Do you have paintings of these, like the original paintings of them? Like,
these are digital paintings.
Oh, okay.
Which means, I've tried to explain this in different ways. Essentially, I create them in the computer and I have this giant monitor that has a stylus that works on it. So it connects to my computer, and then it's got like a stylus that detects how hard you're pressing.
Whoa.
And the angle of it.
Like a little stylus, so cool. Like a paintbrush stylus.
Kinda. Yeah. So it's similar to the Apple Pencil for an iPad, but it's not just one, like the first styluses that came out for tablets basically were like a finger, but like more controlled tip, I guess. This is like very sensitive. It can tell what you're doing.
Wow.
And then I use Photoshop. If people are familiar with that program, it has like a paintbrush tool in it. So I open Photoshop and there's like hundreds of brushes. People have made custom brushes. So yeah, it's a digital painting. I created it in Photoshop.
Wow.
So it was really cool to see it printed out in the lobby, actually, because that was the first time I saw it in physical form.
It's amazing.
That's awesome. You talked about Ephesians 1 kind of speaking to you in this process, and that would be probably a good place to bring this conversation to a close. Tell us why that was meaningful in the process.
Yeah, Ephesians 1. So in the greeting of Ephesians, Paul says that God has blessed you in the heavenly realms with every spiritual blessing. And I really love that passage, and it's easy to overlook because it's in the greeting, and I think sometimes we gloss over the greetings the salutations in the epistles.
Dear brothers and sisters, yeah.
But that, I think that verse is really powerful, and it speaks to God's abundance, and also that God has already given us every spiritual blessing. And sometimes we feel like we're in a dry season of life, or we wonder where God has been. And And when I read that, I'm like, okay, God has already given all of these things. Like, God is here and he's present. Have I reached out to accept that gift and that invitation? And I see the spiritual disciplines as the way to do that, to accept that gift, that invitation. I like that word that Kevin has used a lot, that God is, he's offered us all of these things and he's inviting us to be a part of it. And this is just a tool we can use to accept it. And that, there's actually another parallel between art with that too. Another phrase that I like in the art world is, there are no rules, just tools.
That's good.
And that, I think, also ties in where it's like, it's not that we have to practice silence or we have to practice Sabbath. It's not a rule for us. And there's something in this too, and this is how it works in art, is like you try a bunch of things and you try a bunch of tools, and some of them are even presented like rules, and that's where it's like, there's like five common methods to draw a human head, and they're all like a little different, and there are camps where they like fight about which method is the best. But the response to that is, there are no rules, just tools. Like, what works best for you? And I think that applies really well here as well.
My human head looks like a coconut when I try to draw it. With like two little holes for eyes.
I mean, it's a start.
Rachel,
looks like
do you
a balloon.
Do you remember, Rachel, when it went from rules to tools for you? Or was it always, did you always have a good understanding that they were just tools?
No, I think it definitely went from rules to tools. Because I think I focused a lot on the external of like the right like way of doing things. So even when I first heard about silence and solitude or Sabbath, I'm like, how do I do this right? And then it was frustrating because there was no one right method. But that frustration turned more into freedom of like, okay, what's the goal of this in the first place? And I might copy what someone's doing, but that might not be the way that helps me connect best with God. Like, it might not be sitting in a chair in my living room with like the lights off. It might be out on a walk or out in nature, sitting in silence with the Lord. And I think the more that I tried it and faced that initial frustration of what's the right way, the more freedom there was in, okay, what is this for? And that God meets with us in unique ways in each of these tools.
The Sabbath panel we had, I think it was the week before Easter, we had them on Sunday morning. People from like different walks of life share about their experience with Sabbath. And I think that is a good, another good example of that, just how it's going to look different for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think about my upbringing, and I think there's an element like when you're bringing up children where you need to give them structure and boundaries and show them the way that we do things. And so that's important. And I think, you know, having a really rigorous structure, even around what we believe, I don't think it's not valuable at all. But there is a point at which, like, it needs to become something that you do because you have a reason to do it, not because that's what we do. Like, at some point, you need to go to church because you find some kind of value in church, as opposed to this is what we do, you know. And I feel like it took me a really long time to like finally get to the place where I was like, wait, I want to engage this for real. Because I looked at the disciplines as something that was just like, it was something I had to do. And because of that, you know, I rejected a lot of that and kind of called that legalistic, or that stuff that, like, you know, more, you know, liturgical, more, you know, like Catholic services might do more, you know, emphasize the practices and that kind of stuff. We don't have to do that. Jesus freed us from all of that, you know, and realizing that, like, you know, when you surrender yourself to trying to become more like Jesus, like you said, it eventually you start seeing God using that and shaping you and transforming you with the power of his Spirit. And once you get a glimpse of that, you're like, oh, this is like the joy of the Christian life. Mm. It's becoming more like him and saying, like, I didn't think I could ever become this person, the kind of person that, you know, loves my neighbor, or the kind of person that's generous, or the whatever. So I'm just thinking about through the lens of a parent now, like, how do I help, you know, my teenager see the value in this? Now that she's in that teenager independence, I want to think for myself and do things for myself. How do I guide her instead of force a structure on her? You know, it's just something I'm thinking about. But I love what you're saying, Shalane, that the abundance, God is here. God has been here, and his abundance is here, ready for the taking. We see it in every stream of water, that God is here providing and drawing near to us. So I think that's absolutely beautiful.
When it comes to abundance, that ties into some of the later practices that we haven't gotten to yet, but hospitality. And this goes back to Psalm 23 as well, at the end when it says that God, I think God lays the table before our enemies and our cup overflows. And there's this idea that, like, with God, he's brought us through the valley, and now there's this abundance. And when it comes to hospitality, I think that's the, like, outpouring. We've opened ourselves up to, like, receive God's abundance, and it's not zero sum. It's not like, okay, we have this and we give it and then we're empty. It's like a continual flow of God's abundance, and that ties into Ephesians 2 and just the abundance of God's blessings. So I'm excited to get to that. I don't know when we'll get to hospitality. Next year, probably sometime, but
soon, right, Rachel?
Soon. On the horizon.
Awesome. Thank you for being here with us. And you guys don't know this, but we recorded this conversation before, like 3 weeks ago. It is the first time where I straight up just didn't record one of our voices. And so I called them and I was like, you guys, I'm so sorry. We got to record again. But I love this conversation. And thank you for letting us into your world a little bit, for helping us understand what you're doing. For offering your heart through this artwork. And if you have not examined this artwork now after this conversation, go to the lobby. It's probably the best place right now to view it, where it's printed out big, high quality images. And spend some time, get here early for church, or if you're here during the week or whatever, go in there and just examine it a little bit. And
it's stunning.
If it moves you, tell us. Shalane wants to hear the stories.
Give us the feedback.
We're all about stories. All right, everybody, until next time.